Hello, everyone. Happy Sunday, and welcome to the Restoring Our Roots podcast. This is the voice of the Decriminalized Nature Movement. This podcast is a gathering space where we explore the wisdom of entheogenic plants and fungi, the beauty of natural healing, and the importance of reconnecting with the sacred earth. Twice a month, we'll hear from visionaries, healers, and advocates who are working with entheogenic plants and fungi, exploring realms of consciousness, and returning us to a balanced relationship with nature. My name is Larry Norris. I'm the co-founder of Decriminalized Nature and National Organizing Director. In this role, I really help people out all across the U.S. To pass policy in their local cities. I think we now have affected about 4+ million people all across the U.S. 29 cities all across the U.S. have passed, and we have cities growing all over the world as well. So, if you'd like to support the movement, be a part of the movement, help pass policy in your local area, please go to decriminalizednature.org, and we'll help you out and give you an orientation. Also with us, we have our behind-the-scenes maverick there, Rachel, who's been very helpful in bringing this project together, making sure the production's going well, and doing all the sort of behind-the-scenes things that are a little bit more technical that I'm open to doing. So thank you, Rachel, for being here. Rachel's also posting these episodes on Spotify and other platforms the week after. So this will be coming up on next Sunday after this live show. We're on quite a few new platforms now: Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, YouTube Live as well. If you find us at Decriminalized Nature, if you'd like to make a donation to help support this amazing movement and show, you can do so on these podcast platforms. Just click the donation button. For live listeners, Rachel will also be gathering questions towards the end of the conversation. Around 10 minutes or so, we'll be doing any questions and answers. So if you have any questions or comments, please leave them in the chat box, and we'll make sure to get a hold of them and respond to them as quickly as we can or as thoroughly as we can. Really excited today to have Reggie on board. This is our guest today. Reggie is visionary founder of Oakland Hyphae, which is a testing company here in Oakland, California, that looks at levels and contents of psilocybin and psilocin, norovirus, cysteine, et cetera, that are in your mushrooms. He hosts a lot of really incredible educational events, including conferences like the Oakland Psychedelic Conference, and also has his own podcast and Substack. I just heard from him a minute ago that Hyphae Leaks is the third lead largest psychedelic Substack out there. So congratulations, Reggie, on that. So that's pretty awesome. Really excited too. About 6 months ago, Reggie joined the board of Decriminalized Nature, and it's been really amazing to get to meet him and learn with him on a deeper level. And he's been a really huge help in getting Decriminalized Nature into some new spaces to share about what the Decriminalized Nature movement is up to. So I'm really excited about that. Most recently, we can talk about this in a minute. We're at the Psychedelic Science 25 conference in Denver, and really wonderful to meet and connect a lot of Decrim Nature folks that I hadn't seen only through screen for many years. So thank you, Reggie, for putting that together. It's really great to do that. I've seen a lot of the work you've been doing over the many last few years, and just really been a pleasure to get to meet you on a deeper level. And I'm looking forward to this conversation today, and looking forward to future events and continuing to develop this wonderful relationship. So how are you doing today, Reggie?
Man, Larry, you flip into your podcast mode. You flip into your podcast mode really quickly. I'm doing well on this Sunday. And we were supposed to do this last week, but like you said, we were coming back from MAPS, me and my family. You drove out there with us, but you flew back. And so, we banged it straight through. And we were pulling back into town probably about this time last week. And as much as dedicated as I am to making sure that we communicate and organize within the psychedelic realm, I just had to get some sleep, man. 20 hours straight on the road is rough, you know.
Yeah, no joke, no joke. And it looked like it was snowing a little bit for some period of that time too, huh? 100 degrees
We
in Denver to snow, huh?
100 degrees in Denver, and then all of a sudden, in this there's this natural forest, or this national forest called La Humboldt something forest. It's in between Utah and Nevada. You clearly were there with us. All of a sudden, my cousin's like, "Yo, it's snowing," and I'm looking around. It was a whole snowstorm. And then, once we get through the snowstorm, we roll right into Tahoe. Hours before, I don't know if you saw, but there was this massive storm in Tahoe, unlike any that they've seen in years. And so I think that we beat that in the Tahoe. And as soon as we came off the mountain, thank God to be back in. As far as I'm concerned, even though if you talk to people from the Bay, Sacramento isn't really the Bay. Driving from Denver here, I was in the Bay when I hit Sac, and I was just happy back to 100 degrees and flowing right on home. And then on the Sun on this Monday, I think I took the day off and just says, "Fuck this, I'm gonna go fish and not do shit else." So here we are a week later. a bunch of new relationships. I am so happy that, Decrim Nature got a chance to show up. I think shit like that is important, is important as in as influential Decrim Nature actually is to like not have Decrim show up at some of these events, regardless of like policies or how you feel about MAPS or any of these other organizations. Decrim, as far as I'm concerned, Decrim Nature, as far as I'm concerned, is a pillar and a cornerstone. And I keep saying this, you guys' work is hands down some of the most influential work that is in this space. Why would we not have Decrim Nature at the largest psychedelic gathering? And so, it was, you said it was good for you. It's always good having you guys around. Seem like, we fuck around, we pull into town and we drop Larry. We don't even have to babysit Larry. We drop Larry into the mix, and all of a sudden, all right, okay, I'm at this after party now. After the first day, we didn't see you no more.
Yeah, it just kind of got swept around, That's what happened. So that's good.
It's people, listen, people, it's not that people don't want to see Decrim Nature. I think for a few years there, it was just rough, and it was some, if I forgive me if I used the wrong word, but some political shit. But like, everybody knows Decrim Nature and everybody loves Decrim Nature, and we're moving past this like personal shit. There was just this personal shit that kind of divides the community, and it's my goal, and you'll see this playing out in my work over the next few years, is to like, okay, let's bring folks together. You guys have a massive footprint. MAPS has a massive footprint. I don't want to contend, I don't want to say that I have a footprint anywhere near either of you guys, but I operate in a very unique space where somehow I just find myself in these fucking rooms. And so if I'm in these rooms, yeah, I'm going to talk about, mushroom testing a little bit, but I also talk about policy. And if I'm on the board of Decrib Nature and I can get you into the room to talk about policy, you're much more articulate about policy than me. So we need to have you in these rooms. And so hopefully next year or next MAPS, we can have you on the stage talking that shit,
Thank you. Yeah, it's been it's again, as you mentioned, there's been a lot of history and some challenges and things like that, and it's kind of good to be on the other side of that and be able to kind of share. And like I say, people are hungry for this type of policy. And right now, especially with all the things that are going on with the FDA and everything else, state level issues, giving it back to the people, saying, hey, we can do this on the local level, on a city level, I think it's so critical. And I think people are ready for that and making things move forward. And now we might hear something like, certain deep pockets say, oh, decrim isn't viable on the state level, but it certainly is on the city level. And people are still kind of going after it. And we do such a good work of building relationships with law enforcement and city council and DAs and all that, that I think, while it's a deprioritization and defunding on a technical level, it really is helping a lot of people in all these spaces learn to grow, connect, and
And man, if I ever heard somebody say Decrim is unviable on a statewide level, I'd look around and say, I mean, what do you see that actually is right now?
right. Decrim is
If
the
we're,
only successful policy that's working right now is in Colorado, right? On a state.
well, I don't even, you got to talk to people in Colorado about that. When I talk to people in Colorado, they're like, yo, we don't love what's happening here. So, I think that if people say that, that's more of the divisive rhetoric that leaves us neutered. And I would question anybody who that comes from. At the end of the day, let's say that they're right. Let's concede that they're right. That they can't argue the fact that across the nation, on the local level, once you get the shit rolling on the local level, you can build that out at, municipality by municipality if you want it to basically overwhelm the state to a point where they have no choice. And so, it's I think that, sometimes in the world of community organizing, we say no one person has all the answers, but the community collectively has all of the answers. And if we translate that sort of school of thought to this policy world, into this activism world, all right, maybe you're right. Maybe Decrim isn't viable. I'm not saying this, but just conceding that point. Maybe you're right, and maybe Decrim isn't viable on a state level. But are you now saying that the work that Decrim is doing on a local municipal level isn't helpful? And I would argue against it. I would argue totally against that.
Yeah, exactly. And not only that, but when people say it's not viable or that it's the Wild West or it's too much to do, is like all we're really asking people is not to arrest people.
That's
So
it.
it doesn't cost any money. It's not more action. It's not more difficult than it's already happening, So it's there's certain specific people, and the way they do this is, as you probably know, as an organizer in the past, the polling game, right? And I've seen some of the questions in the polling, and for example, one question, oh, well, we had this really, this high level of interest in therapeutic, but low level interest in decrim. And the question was, do you think that people should be allowed to do psychedelic assisted psychotherapy? Simple, one variable, right? The decrim question is, do you think people over 18 should have the ability to grow, gather, gift these four different plants in their city? Da, 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 da. There's like 20 variables. So you might be for everything else, but not 18 and over. So you're going to say no. Or you might be for everything, but you don't think someone should do this thing, And so when you look at these polling and you actually look at the questions, you're like, man, no wonder that people are saying no to this, because they don't limit it like they do like with their particular biases. So, I always find that funny. And they're also saying this because of the Massachusetts thing, but I've heard a lot of people from Massachusetts on the ground level say actually it was more about the watching what's going on with Oregon and the cost of the taxpayers and everything else. But I think Colorado, while Colorado legalization might have some challenges, the decrim's been going on for 3 years now, and it seems to be at least that people aren't getting arrested for that, so that's a good thing there. So I think there's plenty of viability for it. I just think it's funny when you hear that, you should also be a red flag from whatever whoever's telling you that. You're like, what exactly do you mean? You think that it's more viable to throw people in prison for a plant that grows out of the ground? Come on.
No, yeah. I question everything, and I'm okay. Who's paying you? Who have you been talking to? I saw somebody put out something the other day. Maybe it was you that oh no, it was Double Blind that basically said that the public in general is around mushrooms are still very low information, and so we're all moving around, not us, you and I, but even me, maybe to a point, we're moving around less informed and more okay, I heard this person say that, as opposed to all right, I read the bill. Or I read the paperwork, but in general, from Massachusetts to Oregon, I think that the openness to people, particularly from mushrooms, is leaps and bounds was it what it was even from when you guys first started doing this work. I'm looking at this. I'm watching this series on Hulu called Nine Perfect Strangers. I don't know if you guys heard of it, but. Nicole Kidman is the lead. Is that the woman that Nicole Kidman and Tom Cruise, right?
They were together one time.
So there's this whole show now with a whole bunch of high-level actors and actresses where they're talking about the healing power of mushrooms and going deep. And whenever I see stuff like that, I remember when I was coming up, there was two sources, basically two sources that you could get your information from. It was this website called The Shroomery, and I can still remember logging on, sneaking to look at it. I remember I was logging on to The Shroomery with dial-up, with AOL dial-up, and then Arrowwood Vaults, and this is where we went to get all of our information, and we had to sift through a bunch of nonsense oftentimes to get to our good stuff. And now they've like mainstreamed all of this. Nicole Kidman is the lead. Nicole Kidman is administering people mushrooms to help deal with to help deal with deep trauma. And granted, a person like me who has grown mushrooms, I'm looking at this grow room that they have and these mushrooms that they're growing, and I'm like, those look like reishi. Those don't even look like regular mushrooms or psilocybin mushrooms. And I'm looking at the way that a lot of these things play out, and they do sensationalize it for Hollywood. But Eminem normalized mushrooms for me, and this is the same Eminem that was getting being canceled at the same time for using expletives toward basically everybody but black people. There was nothing off limits for Eminem. And so he was at that point like a fringe character. And he didn't talk about any of the healing aspects. He talked about a lot of the recreational aspects and some of the downside aspects. And now we have this show, Nine Perfect Strangers. We have there's another cartoon character where
Common
these
side effects or something like that.
common side effects, which actually I kind of like it a little bit. You know, I kind of like it, but
I
this.
just started watching that just a couple days ago. So yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. They go a little bit of a different route. I think what's interesting about it is you see this in the farmer world, which is that, the side effect is the trip, right? Oh, it has these side effects, which is
Oh,
the trip.
true. Yeah, yeah, yeah,
It's like,
yeah,
oh,
yeah,
it's the
yeah,
other
yeah,
person. But
yeah.
you see that even with how, DARPA and other things are, let's take away the psychedelic side effect. And the other thing will be the thing that helps heal people instead of seeing like, oh, that's a big part of it, And I haven't seen the full series. I don't know if they're going to get to it towards the end about what that weird inner space is that they go to in terms of the healing connection. But it is interesting to kind of see that all shake out. Spoiler alerts for anyone that hasn't seen it out there. But yeah, that's a good one. And a couple other ones out there that are pretty interesting too. That yeah, you're just kind of seeing it kind of get into the mainstream mindset, And then you have the CNN article. I think we talked about this in our last podcast, that saying basically, unsupervised use of psychedelics has increased dramatically over the last
That's what I
6 years.
saw. Yeah,
I was like,
yeah.
yeah, good. Congratulations.
I
You're
mean,
doing
who?
it.
Honestly, I don't know. I feel like unsupervised use has probably decreased over the last few years because I don't know anybody who was, when I was coming up, I don't know anybody who was getting supervised mushroom trips unless you talk about supervised, a whole bunch of friends doing it together.
Right. Yeah. So the supervised has probably increased more so. The unsupervised use has just stayed the same, basically. Yeah. But hey, that's great. Let's before we kind of jump right into everything, which is great
Sorry.
for folks that are no, that's perfect. Yeah. Folks that maybe don't know who you are, Reggie, maybe give a little background bio and maybe share a little bit about how you got into this space and kind of what your interests are.
Okay. So, yeah, we did just jump right in. Sorry, I just started
No,
talking.
that's great. That's great.
Yeah, my name is Reggie. As you guys heard, I Eminem and me, we have this bond as it becomes to mushrooms, as it relates to mushrooms. Way back in the day when I was still in high school, just over 20 years, 20 plus years at this point, I was very curious about drugs, and I didn't do all drugs, but I was curious about all drugs, and I just was on this thing where I would read anything I could, and if it sounded interesting, I would try the drugs. I was particularly drawn toward hallucinogens. I guess maybe today we call them psychedelics, but anything that would change your direct reality and change the way that the reality presented is what I was interested in. And mushrooms was one that seemed like I could, kind of experiment with on a very safe kind of level. And I remember reading my shit, this is how long ago it was. I remember reading the driver's ed book that the state of Maryland gave me at that time, and they had a whole chapter of hallucinogens, and like the mushrooms were in there, but also nutmeg was in there. And I remember trying one of those small McCormick, things of nutmeg, just poured it in some orange juice and took it. And yeah, if you guys don't know, nutmeg is a very, very, very strong drug. Extremely strong. I've never been that high in my life. Period. To this day. And so nutmeg really wasn't for me, but eventually I came across mushrooms, and Eminem had this song called, like, I don't know, maybe it's called I'm Sorry or something. He had a song where he talked about mushrooms, and it sounded interesting. And so, along the way, I finally was able to find mushrooms. And at that point, at least for me, a high schooler living in Maryland, mushrooms weren't really easy to find. And I finally found them. And there was this group of kids. I call them the druggy kids, really, because these were the kids who would walk through high school on LSD. They were very smart kids. They would end up skipping school. A lot of them ended up graduating and going straight into like community college early. But I had a large range of friends, as I do now. And so my black friends weren't really interested in taking the mushrooms with me, but my white friends were. And of the white friends, those druggies, the ones in the dressed up like goths and stuff like that. So I remember we would one day, I remember I got the mushrooms. And it was raining, and we all went and hung out under the patio of like the local bar. So we weren't in the bar, but under the patio. We were kids at this point. And I remember taking them, and I remember feeling the onset. It was very physical. I didn't see anything, but it was very physical. And I remember I having to walk home maybe the mile or two or more that I lived away from this place, and it just felt like I was walking through one of these wading pools of water. And I finally got home, and the next day, the white boy that I took the mushrooms with asked me, he's like, "Well, how much for an eighth of these?" And like, I had never even thought of that. I just got the mushrooms, and he asked me that question, and I'm like, "Well, I don't know. How much does an eighth usually cost?" And he told me $10 a gram. And I did the math, and it found like I could win at that price, is what I'll say. And so from there, it's pretty much history for me. I went to college down in Florida, where the mushroom laws are very interesting. If you pick mushrooms fresh and you have them fresh and you get caught by law enforcement and you claim to not know that they're psychedelic mushrooms, that's legal. If you pick them and you know that they're psychedelic mushrooms, that's illegal. If you pick them and dry them, that's illegal. But I remember, mushrooms pretty much financed the second half of my high school and then my college experience. And I remember being out there on the cow fields in North Florida. I got picked up by some farmer and, picking mushrooms on his farm, which is, if you think about it these days, he had a rifle. He could have shot me dead on his property, but I figured out that the rifle wasn't loaded, and me and my friend jumped out the car and we ran. Turns out I ended up dropping out of college to go work on the largest magic mushroom farm in the world, in Holland. And at that point, mushrooms were legal in Europe. That's a whole nother story, but I did that. And then for a period of time, the law changed and I couldn't work in mushrooms internationally. And clearly here in the States, it was prohibited. And so for that period of time, I got straight into politics and, I worked both Obama elections. I went on the campaign trail with Bernie Sanders. A lot of activist work, working with some of the families of Black people who have been impacted by police violence. All this stuff is stuff I cared about before, but mushrooms were allowing me to make a better living. And I did this around the country from New York to ultimately the Bay. And when I got back to the Bay, I lived here and I did some political work, but that political work doesn't pay. Activism work doesn't pay. And $55,000 a year is what I was making at that time, living in the Bay. That was half of my take home. And so I'm sorry, half of my take home was going to a rent. And I got another paycheck to figure out how to do everything else with. That shit just wasn't working for me. So I told myself that I was going to get out of politics and come back as a funder once I figured out how to make some money. So I started working on weed farms for a little bit. And the last year I was working on a weed farm, I'll never forget, I was at a bar right down the street from this thing called The Haven, which for me, that was like the heyday. That was the high water mark in my mushroom experience. And The Haven was this place on Telegraph Avenue in Oakland that one of the old chairs of Decrim Nature, Carlos Plazola, started, where at one point, man, you and I'm saying this to the people, you already know, but everybody was under one roof. Everybody who you could think of was under one roof. Shakruna was there, Sage was there, Maps was there, everybody was under one roof. And I was able to kind of experienced that before it all, came to an end. And this was right before COVID like hit. I'd gotten word that Colorado had decrimmed, and then I got word that Oakland was about to decrim, and for sure it did. And I started showing up at events at the Haven all the time, making friends, meeting everybody I could. And that experience pretty much jump started the second half of my mushroom experience, just getting cool with everybody, until ultimately The Haven ceased to exist right around pretty much COVID, where everybody had to go inside. And at that point, we couldn't really move around, but I was already, the ball had started, the for me the spark had been reignited, and I started just cultivating as much mushrooms as I can, teaching myself. I had genetic steel from Europe, and so just growing. And we're growing these mushrooms, and we're trying to sell these mushrooms, and we're having these weird conversations with people around how you value mushrooms in terms of potency. And you can't shoot at a moving target. So if people said that, hey, this mushroom is too blue, or the cap is not big enough, or the stem is too long, like, what do you do with that? And so during COVID, myself and some scientists teamed up to basically form a scientific method on how we could test mushrooms scientifically, quantitatively. And so after about a year of kind of, what we call fuck around and find out, that's our motto, we ended up landing on a method that would allow us to test mushrooms for potency. And so we, for the very first time, we went through these things in Oakland called seshes, where we bought mushrooms from other people, and we tested them, and we put those reports out, and the entire world went crazy when we did it. Like, I've never seen anything like it. And it's we knew when we did it, we were making history, and it felt like, I've never felt anything like that. People, nobody had ever seen anything like that, and we did it. And so we formed, we started basically what is now an industry. It's the mushroom potency testing industry. We were the first people to do it. We were the first people to do a psilocybin cup, which now we call the hype cup, because everybody's trying to do a cup. And and some people are so bold to not even rename it. They just call it the psilocybin cup as well. So we call it the hype cup. And then along the way, in addition to the potency testing, I told you I did political work, I did organizing work. And so I saw a need to start organizing, particularly, POC and Black community around psychedelics. In the Black community, at least when I was growing up, like I told you, we considered psychedelics a white thing. And, what I learned from going to Detroit, meeting the lineage of Baba Kalendi and all those folks, is mushrooms isn't just a white thing. And we should start organizing culturally relevant events for, other sorts of folks. Maybe people who, can't go to Costa Rica to get their retreat, or people who may not have experience with sound bowls or that little accordion that they play in yoga class. But maybe people who need the healing, but they like rap music, or they like, R&B, or maybe they don't use the Latin binomials, but they just, they speak how they speak. And so we leaned into becoming a cultural, what I call it, a cultural curator of the psychedelic space for folks kind of like me. And so that's kind of a little brief history. We got into Hyphae Leaks and our media wing, just because in my time in politics, I realized very quickly that you could make up and you could control your narrative, or you could let somebody else control your narrative. And so we very quickly decided that we wanted to control not only our narrative, but we wanted to add a new voice into a space that was largely void of any Black voices, and that was the psychedelic media space. So we started Hyphae Leaks podcast in partnership with Psychedelics Today, and we started Hyphae Leaks Substack in partnership, which, I mean, shoot, in partnership with y'all, the people. So that's a long version of how I got here, but now we're here, and I'm feeling very blessed to be here. This is the first time in my adult life that I feel like I've had a community of people all around me anywhere I go. And it just feels good. It feels good to not just be in the passenger side of this experience, but in the driver's seat as well.
Yeah, I mean, you've done such amazing work in so many different areas over the time. It's really been amazing to watch. I mean, even just watching just with the testing, when we'll go to the other stuff in a minute, but the testing, busting myths that we've heard our whole life, like one bag is the same across the board, boom, busted that, right? That there's more than psilocybin and psilocin. You got baocystine, norbaocystine, other things in the mushrooms that helps to move your experience. That's another thing. I even saw you did something where maybe tell the audience a little bit about you did something where you tested between caps and stems. When I was growing up, caps are visual and stems are body and da da da, and it's the head and the body, but you busted that myth. So maybe tell a little bit about that, because those are different things that like we hear so much in sort of the conversation, but nobody's actually done the science or fucked around and find out, as you said, right?
Yeah.
You're doing that. And so maybe talk a little bit about that as well.
That was the first that was one of the, if not, if it wasn't the first study we did, it was one of the first few studies we did where, because we came from the community. We weren't new here. We knew it. We knew of all the myths. We knew how people were talking. So we're figuring out how we can connect with the people. And it seems so obvious that this is what you would do. Excuse me. But nobody had done it before. And so we ran an experiment just wanting to do something that we knew folks of the community would connect with, and that's caps versus stems. And we ran the test with caps versus stems to try to figure out where the potency was, if caps were more potent, because where I came from, the caps are more potent than the stems. And what we realized that if there's a one-to-one ratio in terms of mass, that the results are negligible. So they're relatively equal. We have found that there was that there's a difference between potency in terms of when, if the cap is open on the mushroom or if the cap is closed. We have found that there is a difference there, but in terms of valuing the cap of a mushroom because it has a higher level of potency over over the stem, that is a myth. Now, to the point that you brought up, the science is still out on whether a cap might be more visual than a stem. And that science is just simply up to if, in terms of how these other, minor tryptamines may play into what we consider visual or body. And we don't know that, but there's starting to become so much information that between AI or data scientists, I'm certain within the next 12 to 24 months, we should be able to start aggregating data to putting actual testing data against anecdotal experiences so we can start drawing some conclusions on how some of these minor tryptamines interact with the body.
Yeah, I mean that's such important work because again, we all been thinking about it, but you're actually checking it and testing it, and I think that's what's amazing. And the idea of like oh maybe this we often hear oh psilocybin 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 in the news, and if we're just talking about decriminalizing psilocybin, the mushroom's still illegal. It's psilocin and the other things in there. But now when you get into these layers of these sort of minor tryptamines that are in there, like the baocystins, the norbaocystins, how does that affect? Can you even like cultivate a mushroom for somebody that has PTSD that maybe helps them with anxiety issues as well as giving them the journey or all these different other ways that people can, or if you want to have a big spiritual experience, do you go more on this or that, So I think there's a lot of really fascinating things that you're sort of discovering in this process. And it's been really, really amazing to watch that happen. And, and second thing that I'm also super excited about that you're doing is sort of bringing out this conversation. You're saying these different communities, coming from the north of Detroit area myself, when gave a talk at Kalindi's first entheogenic conference in 2013, and was always like, man, it'd be great to get Oakland and Detroit hooked up, linked up, like finding a way to like get these conversations going. And between the work you're doing and Kalindi and Mudu and all those folks, Mamayana, it's been really, really beautiful to watch this conversation happening on all different levels now. And so I really want to say thank you to that. And as a leader in that and sort of a pioneer in bringing that all together, what is your, you can bring this into the map stuff as well, but what is your sort of view of the ecosystem as you see it out there? You're seeing all these things kind of ebb and flow. You're watching, you got this sort of high level perspective. Same as like watching the cities. Like we had a lot of Kansas and Kentucky at the MAPS conference for some reason. Why all of a sudden all these people, right? You're seeing the ebb and flow on a high level of what's going on nationwide. What do you see in terms of the conversation, the ecosystem, the hot spots? What things are you kind of excited about or maybe concerned about?
I mean, the community is growing. The community is definitely growing. I really think that anybody who wasn't in Oakland in 2019 really you'll never know. Like, this is one of these situations that I can tell people about all the time. It's never going to be that way. It was a one-on-one situation, but it was beautiful. But the community is still growing, and we see, I do think that there is a sister brother relationship going on between Colorado and Oakland, and between Oakland and Detroit. Then there's the cities that like have decrimmed, and that's just it. There, it's people are trying to figure it out, but there's not, a cohesive move in a certain direction. We here in Oakland, we have something different going on where the government doesn't have their hands all over it. But I do believe that we lead the way. Case in point, the first mushroom church came out of here, and now you're seeing people everywhere, even in these places where it's legal statewide, they're looking to Oakland to try to figure out how to run the Oakland or how to run mushroom churches. When you're looking, the work that we did in testing in the places where there's legislation making it legal, they're looking to Oakland to figure out testing and things like that. And we're still kind of underground here in Oakland. I mean, if we talk about how people are bringing folks together around the science, people haven't figured out a way to bring people together around the science except for doing psilocybin cups, and that shit started in Oakland. I see places that are surprising me, kind of having really robust communities, like Asheville, North Carolina, somewhere where, that's the last place where you would think that they have a bustling community. In Asheville, North Carolina, they have a statue of Robert E. Lee erected downtown. And yet and still, this is like, if you were to ask me anywhere east of the Mississippi that I wanted to tap in with the mushroom community, it's Asheville, North Carolina, because that little mountain town is booming. But as the community grows, I'm seeing, a bunch of different interests come in. So you have, your moneyed people, the people who are just trying to figure out how to make a buck out of it. We're watching the collapse of the cannabis industry. I was with a friend just yesterday, and they had a pound of weed sitting on their table. I'm like, yo, how much did that cost? $400 for a pound of weed. In my day, when I was in the weed industry, it was $3,000 to $4,000 a pound, and 400. So you're seeing the collapse of the weed industry, and you're seeing those people kind of push into psychedelics in ways that I don't know if I'm comfortable with. A lot of them are strictly product minded. They don't know the community. I tried to write a book with Ed Rosenthal. Fuck Ed Rosenthal. He put a book out. He stole my work. But when I'm doing this book with him, he's like, yeah, can you write a chapter about the effects of mushrooms? This one gives you attention. This one, they're categorizing mushrooms like you categorize cannabis. And that, like, I'm sure somebody will do it, and they do it in Europe, but it's not true. You can't categorize mushrooms like that because of the set and setting aspect. And so I see a lot of cannabis people moving in, bringing a lot of bad cannabis habits. In the world of cannabis right now, the whole idea is, yeah, we got to scale up really high so that we can benefit from economies of scale, which in turn caused the collapse of the price of mushrooms. When I was in the mushroom space cultivating, the price of mushrooms was $1,900 a pound. And now you can find a pound, shit, you can find a pound for as cheap as 250. I wouldn't buy that pound. But you can find pounds as cheap as 250, and that happened after cannabis people started moving in. And then there's like different kind of silos of the community. So you have the whole cultivator space over here, and cultivators pretty much kind of deal with cultivators. They have cultivator speak, and they enjoy the stuff that cultivators enjoy. Then you have the therapist kind of over here, and they again have their therapist speak, and the therapist audience. You have the scientists down here that are, whew, that scientific community is rough. I got to be honest. I thought that the cultivators were incels, but these scientists, oh, that's a rough community. And then you have the ceremony community, which, frankly, between the therapist and the ceremony are probably my favorite people across the board, across cultural lines. Oftentimes they're, not nobody is a monolith, but just if you had to kind of sum them up, I love the therapists and I love the ceremonial people because they seem to oftentimes just be more balanced and more accepting and more socialized. So that's kind of 30, kind of, well, that's more, that's closer than 30,000 feet. Maybe that's 10,000 feet just looking at the landscape of the psychedelic community. The one thing that that we're working on and that I love the most about it is, this is the Black community in particular in the psychedelic space. There's so few of us that we're mainly connected and we seem to love each other and we do things together. We communicate. We're kind of all on the same group chats and it seems like an extended family. And so that for me feels good.
Great. Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, thank you for that overview there. I think there's so many bits and pieces and nuances and changes in community. The went to the conference in 2013 when it was in Oakland with MAPS, and the 2017 one we did like a post-conference workshop that and those people were kind of ramping up, and then the last conference was not so good, but then all these other in terms of like pharma and corporate sort of mindset, but then all these other like super grounded conferences are happening. And so now it was interesting to see this conference recently because they didn't have that identity of the FDA trial pharmaceutical drug development company anymore. And so what, how are they going to ground this? And I saw the range of talks. Now, of course, you can make, conversation in either way, but the range of talks seemed different. It seemed more back towards maybe even 2013 time. While they didn't have the large community, they were open to new ideas and interesting things that weren't just sort of, neurochemistry scientists talk, as you mentioned earlier, and bringing in these people that are grounded in ceremony and grounded in sort of helping people out and supporting people, but also kind of the people that are thinking about this from like the real metaphysical, what's going on in consciousness, the nature of reality, all that type of thing, I think is a fascinating conversation. And you did a couple. What, three talks at the MAPS conference? Yeah.
I had two talks. One talk about kind of the science and testing, and another talk, frankly, just about my experience as a Black person in this space. And it was an interesting conversation because I was the one of the few people on the talk that had a direct connection with the medicine. The through line for everybody, for all of us, is it was, I think, four Black men and we had all been incarcerated at some point. My incarceration was the shortest time of them all, but these guys, some one of these guys was locked up for 52 years. And then, he gets out and he's talking just about, healing and the medicine. And, there was, for me, that talk just shit, I could have not even been on the stage and been in the crowd and just would have been very moved by what those men were talking about and the insights and observations that they were sharing. But I always say that of all of these events, I don't give a fuck. You'll never hear me saying, actually, I take that back. You'll never hear me saying I'm going to an event to see anybody talk other than my friend. I don't give a fuck about the talks on stage. I give a fuck, and I'll keep saying this. I've been saying this in all of my Instagram posts about, the conference. The best part isn't what's happening on stage or even the speakers on stage. We'll meet them at some point. The best part is the people, like the average people who you meet in the hallways or who you meet after a talk. That's where the magic happens. Okay, all right. I met Paul Stamets. Cool. I met Dennis McKenna. Cool. Guess what? I also met this woman from Mill Valley, who's in the Bay, who's serious about fucking unifying the Bay Area psychedelic community, who wants to do this work. That's way more, and nothing to take away from any of those guys I just said, but for me, that's way more impactful than, meeting Stamets or McKenna, because we're going to be able to do some work and leave a fucking impact and touch so many other people instead of just getting this selfie. And some people go to these things to take the selfies and to go to the parties, but for me, it's the people every single time. Fuck the organizations. Fuck how you feel about MAPS. Fuck how you feel about Hyphae. Fuck how you feel about Decrim Nature. But how do you feel about them people? How do you feel about the people in the organizations? And like, that's That's what it is to me. And frankly, that's the, in my mind, that's the mushroom centered way to look at the things. The rest of it's like ego stroking, you know? Okay, I got this selfie. I look at people who the first thing out their mouth is, can I get a picture? I look at those people weird. And I look at the people who will go and meet, like, they'll pass over so many wonderful people so that they can take this selfie and put on the internet. That's just, it's strange to me, particularly people who are supposed to be organizers, you know? And so for me, my heart is beating fast just because that was, you can't deny, you know, you can't deny, no matter how you feel about maps and no matter how you feel about the work, they brought so many people together that got a chance to commune. And if you use the time right, man, you left there so much better, well connected, and so much better, well networked than you did when you came.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I totally kind of see. I see all everyone with their selfies. I was like, man, I don't think I took one selfie, you know. So, but that's all right, you know. I think you're right on point with, like, you know, the only talk that I'm bummed that I missed was the one where I waited in the line for what I thought was your talk, and then it was stuck was down the hallway. But yeah, I didn't see any talks. I just talked to people. It was the one-on-ones, you know. The one-on-ones are where it's at. And I think, you know, even I think Terrence McKenna said that one time. He's like, you know, the only reason I'm up on stage here is so you all can meet yourself, each other. You know, so that's, I think, what I think is the beauty of that. And then again, since we've been, you know, online for so long after COVID and everything, to see three-dimensional versions of people that I've only seen through the screen, or see people I haven't seen in a while, or connect with people that I just am meeting for the first time, you know, hanging out more deeply with, you know, you and Brian, everyone else, you know, it's like that's fun stuff, you know. That's where it's all at, you know, and it's an opportunity, it's a place, it's a beacon for us all to go to have those side conversations. And I think you're right on about that.
When we became we went from being colleagues to fucking I spent, other than like the lady that I hang out with, I think I've spent the night with you more than anybody that's not blood in the last 6 months.
And it's a blast, you know, going again to these after hours parties and you know, chatting with people up, or even like, you know, I mean, for the audience out there, Reggie loves, it seems, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, loves to be in places that are unexpected or meet people that you wouldn't expect to meet. And we went on this, the loneliest road in America. Some lady was, you're driving through, and some lady was out there, bartender, and she's yelling, she's cussing out this person on the street. You call me a harlot? Get out of here. Don't ever come back. Reggie's like, you got to stop there. We're going to have a beer now. So we slowed down, we stopped, had a conversation, and you know, only two people in the bar, both of them wasted, one of them, you know, yelling and screaming, and it was fun. It was good times, you know. And I think that's, again, taking the conference even out on the larger scales, like, it's about meeting people, it's about connecting with people, it's about seeing what their stories are all about, it's about seeing how did they get to where they're at right now in life. And you know, and everyone's got an interesting story at some point in time, especially when you're on the loneliest road in America. So that was good times.
That was a blast. And we knew we were going to do it, or at least I knew we were going to do it before we stopped. It was, my spirit said, we're going to stop somewhere on this road and we're going to visit one of these backcountry bars. And we did. And by far, it was an experience that we'll never forget. I was telling that story immediately. It was like a saloon with a wooden porch. You walk in, there's wooden floors everywhere.
The door's all like squeaky, squeaky, squeaky.
And everybody knew we wasn't from there. Yes, the lady did have a story, but the place had a story. Clint Eastwood filmed the movie there, you know. And the woman who we met just met her dad, you know, like weeks before we pulled up. And so just seeing that, when was the last time you had a $3 beer anywhere? We had $3 beer, and then we had to beg the dude to take our money.
Yeah, and he's giving me a little history lesson on politics too,
That's when we left. That's when we left. I'm not doing politics in the backwoods. My ancestral memory tells me I know better than that.
Yeah, so yeah, so that's just, you know, Ben, again, one of those things where it's been such a pleasure to kind of connect with you and just see how you sort of navigate the world. I think that's a really important side thing. You never really see when you're just talking with somebody, you're emailing or on the phone or in meetings or even at a conference, but all that kind of stuff has been really great. So yeah, so thank you for that. And I guess I just a little topic, because I think you know, I see we have about 10 minutes left, but I know you were mentioning this earlier. And what are your thoughts around it? So many people at the conference were like, "Oh, we're trying to create this new platform," but obviously Meta has been an issue for folks, right? And I know that you got a bunch of your platforms taken down recently. How do we as a community come together? Do we have to address it on like a large, sternly written letter? Like, what's the way to get these folks to stop censoring what's just education, what's good risk reduction, what's good harm reduction, what's good conversation? It has nothing to do with buying or selling of anything. And yet here people are getting dinged and you see it all over the psychedelic space. What's your kind of your thoughts around that before we head into the questions?
I think that if we look at the way that that frankly take some lessons out of the new administration's playbook, first we have to start by collectively going to our electeds. And so, we can go to people like Weiner. He likes to take up a lot of these things. He doesn't lose anything by going to talk to Silicon Valley, and he's a state senator who they'll listen to. If Decrim, if Shakruna, if MAPS, if Hyphae, if the organizations, we all formed a coalition, I believe, had had plain re plainly written language that left ego out of it, that just basically said, listen, you guys need to do better because we are harm reductionists and we're providing education. And if you don't leave it, if you take us down, all that's going to be left is the trappers. And keep in mind, I don't judge the trappers, but I don't think that they're mo a lot of them. I don't think their motivations are the same as, let's say yours would be, or Shakruna's would be, or Matt's would be, or mine would be in terms of giving people a lot of good harm reduction information. You need people like us to help protect from, people who would benefit from a lower information consumer. And I think that if we all collectively, because Weiner knows us all. Weiner knows us all, and he's been out here trying to lead this fight. If we say, Weiner, we need you to go talk to these people on this behalf, I think that's a step. I think that taking it up a notch to the federal level, same thing, finding a target who claims to support these things, and we say, bare minimum, if you can't get policy passed, at least make sure that they don't just kill us, because that's what it is. It's killing us. When they take my website, when they take my IG down, they're taking down 6 years worth of work and information, and I have to start over from scratch. Somebody's not benefiting from that. And we can't, we, there's no question. There's no question that the world of psychedelics has benefited from the information I put out. There's no question that the world of psychedelics has benefited from the information in this. And we can prove this. We can prove that we're not selling anything, but we're providing information. And so I think that collectively, we have to put pressure on the pressure points that we have. An organizer, we always say people power is the only thing that's going to beat money. And right now, these people, they took down Trump, and as soon as Trump got in power, what did he make Meta do? He made him pay a few million dollars for taking him down. He made him pay a few million dollars to support his reelection party. And so I think we need to take a page out of his book and flex that way. I also think that we need to lean toward platforms that respect freedom of speech. And this is the reason I'm on Substack. My IG is at 12, maybe 12,000 now. It was at 21,000. And this is my second one. They took that first one down. After they took the first one down, I transitioned over to Substack. And I'm going to say this is going to be shocking, but you'll get the message. I watched the CEO of Substack do an interview, and they were like, yo, if Nazis start putting up Nazi propaganda on a Substack page, are you going to take it down? And he didn't say he would. He didn't say yes or no, but I got the message. And if you'll allow this Nazi to do whatever they want over here because of free speech, then my little mushroom page, I feel I'm good. And so, finding pages that really do believe in this is America, and we're seeing a lot of the hypocrisy and the shit that they've taught us throughout our lifetime. If I can't talk to people about mushroom potency testing, something that across the board, nobody can argue. I don't care what you do, you can't argue that knowing the strength of a drug that you're going to take is bad for you. If they'll take that down, nobody is safe. And so I think moving toward platforms like Substack and or making sure that we're somehow keeping in very close community with outside of these socials, because even TikTok isn't okay. Twitter isn't okay. Facebook isn't okay. IG, they can take any of those tomorrow. And so I think that we should start migrating to a direct to audience sort of communication. But just circling back and buttoning it up, I think the number one thing that we all can do, and something that I'm pushing to do, I have a dinner, a tea. I'm having tea with Bia from Shakruna on Monday. And this is a person who I've not seen eye to eye with for years. But at this point, we are bringing people together and we're moving forward for the greater good of the community as opposed to individuals and ego.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, Substack, I think that's something is a little shot for me. I know Rachel's been talking about it as well, getting on that Substack thing. So that's definitely something. But I think, this idea, this coalition of free speech, and we really push hard on Wiener with all these different organizations and all these different organizations, communities, and especially, Psychedelic Society SF, they got third, fourth time, they got to shut down as well. So there's so many communities out here right now that are in this position of being like, we can't talk to our audience right now and share this good information. So I'm definitely behind, however that works out, in terms of, well, it will work out. Let's make something happen. Let's get this coalition together. Let's talk to Wiener and see if him or someone else can at least start to, whether it's legislation or just a word or whatever else, but to make sure that people aren't like losing out on good information, especially as we're in this very precipice of this movement moving forward, and good information is really critical to making sure it goes out in a good way.
Yeah.
Nice ideas on that. Awesome. Well, thank you, Reggie. We got a question from Rachel, and then we'll wrap it up.
Definitely. Okay, that was such a great conversation. I had a few questions, but I'm going to keep it to one for this conversation. I also, when you were talking, Reggie, I just had that. I think it was Jimi Hendrix who said that when the power of love overcomes the love of power, then the world will be free. This idea of like everything that you're doing, like they're censoring you because you're on like, the good guys. And like, and if this is a comic book, this is kind of like, oh, they're pushing down on everything because they know like their time is up. So the truth is the truth. We will figure out ways to get the message out there, even if they come after social media. I believe in like the psychedelics, the entheogens. They have given us the ability to use this in a creative way that they can't. So it's we can figure it out. So
Yeah.
my question was, I loved what you were talking about, like stems versus caps, and this like almost like mushroom myth busting. So I was wondering, what is the biggest mushroom myth that you yourself has bust have busted, or if not that, a mushroom myth that you think is very prevalent in the world that you think would do, like if people knew the truth about it, would do be better for the mushrooms?
Okay. Well, that's a great question. Makes me think a little bit. Well, for time's sake, I'll say the one of the clear myths that we busted was that caps are more potent than stems. We have totally disavowed that. We did a test where we tried to figure out at which stage of growth are most mushrooms most potent, and we found it what we called in the abort stage. So that's basically when they're just little blobs. Before they even have like become much more than little mushroom looking things, I mean little marshmallow looking things, that's most potent. But this is a good one that I don't think I've debunked, but anecdotally, after just through observing the various characters throughout the mushroom community, is that if you eat more mushrooms, you'll become a great person. That is, my home
Ooh,
girl
that's
like.
a good one. That is a good one. That's what psychedelics in general I find as well.
Yeah, my home girl named Charlotte James. She is she's just very insightful. She calls mushrooms and psychedelics an enhancer. So if you have something in you, these things will often enhance that as opposed to eat more mushrooms and you'll be a healed person. I don't believe in that. And when I see the Musks and folks like that, kind of championing mushrooms, it always scares me because of the amplifying properties of mushrooms.
Great answer. That's good. That's an important one, I think, as well, because it's just this idea of like, I think we talked about this in our talk too, just like using a hammer for something that requires a fine tool. Like this world doesn't know how to just be like, oh my gosh, nuance. All right, back to you, Larry.
Great. Thanks, Rachel. Thanks for that, Reggie. I think that's well, important, also funny, because I think you do hear that. It's kind of becomes the the main conversation. Oh, okay, I'll just, we call that the spiritual bypassing too, right? Oh, I've done my big mushroom experiences. I met God
I'm
or I became
good.
Buddha, and I'm all good, exactly. Yeah. But in the meantime, you're still doing the same old shit and not really helping out at all. So yeah, that's a it's a mess.
Healing is not a straight line, 100%.
Yeah, for sure now, for sure. Right on. Well, thank you very much, Reggie, for being here, for taking a little time off your Sunday to connect. I know you've been, I want to ask about 10 more questions, but the conversation was just wonderful as it was. We'll get you on another time, maybe get you more probably we're doing this every other weekend, but if there's a time you want to kind of connect or get on here, have some more conversation, that'd be great. I look forward to, I know you've got some DC stuff coming up and a couple other events coming up in the near future too. So anyone out there, if they want to kind of get a hold of you outside of the socials, what's the best way for them to get a hold of you?
Just go to my website and sign up. The website is Oakland, spelled like Oakland, hyphae, HYPHAE.com. You go on there, you sign up to the newsletter, and I always take those emails and just translate those straight to Substack. So you'll stay in touch there. You can send me a message if you're interested in testing. Send me a message. I tout myself as the most secure testing service out there. There's a lot of people doing potency testing. Most of them retain a whole bunch of personal information, like credit cards and stuff like that. Guess what happens if the federal government comes and asks them for it? They're not going to jail for you. So if they have it, the government has it. So if you're interested in testing, holler at me if you care about staying safe. If you care about the rest, it's America. But other than that, Substack, it's Hyphae Leaks, HYPHAELEAKS. It's a nod to Julian Assange and WikiLeaks. And other than that, the best place, I don't know if it's the best place, but a good place to see and to connect is in real life. So any events, we generally do something at some region of the year. At some point. And so the next thing we're going to be in DC, July the 18th and 19th. Hopefully we can get Larry out there with us, and there's going to be a whole bunch of good psychedelic folks from around the country at the National Cannabis Festival.
Great. Well, awesome. Thank you very much, Reggie. I look forward to more. For everyone out there, thank you for being here as well. Thank you, Rachel. Our normal schedule is live every 2 weeks, but obviously with the MAPS conference, we shook that up a little bit. I also was tight on time, and I know that we flipped a little bit beforehand with Rachel on the other side. So we're going to be our next live show again next Sunday with Alexander Plesner, who does psychedelics design. She's from, I think, Switzerland, I believe, or Germany. And she's been doing some pretty interesting work regarding psychedelic design and systems change and all that type of thing. And that's going to be on Sunday, July 6th at 9 a.m. Pacific. And next week, for those who aren't listening to this live, this episode will be available on Spotify and other platforms with Reggie. So thank you again, everyone, for listening. Thank you, Reggie. Thank you, Rachel. And until next time, tune in, stay rooted, and let's grow together. Have a good night, everybody.
Bye.